The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. It seems to come around quicker and quicker. I'm David Zeidel, and this is the AutJet Business Show. And tonight we got Larry Hodes, a business coach, also leadership development, and a restaurant owner. Welcome, Larry.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much, David.
And I'm going to introduce Larry formally in a moment, but as I always do, we start off with a little bit of a business story. And this business story is a little bit different. It's about, or it's actually called the Two Pizza Rule. And I thought it's appropriate for somebody who owns a restaurant, okay, where we start off with the Two Pizza Rule. And what it is, it's actually from Jeff Bezos from Amazon. And they create all sorts of different things, and they have efficient teams. And he says, a team of people who are trying to create something, you should not have more than two pizzas to be able to feed them all. And it's his way of saying that the team should only be between 5 and 10 people maximum, because it allows for agility, easier communication, and most definitely less bureaucracy. So sometimes we think more is better, but sometimes keeping it less and more focused makes for a better team. So that was our business lesson for today, straight from Jeff Bezos, who is fairly successful, I would say.
Oh, absolutely.
So who is Larry Hodes? Larry Hodes is a seasoned business coach, leadership developer, and a successful restaurant owner. And for over 30 years, he's been helping leaders and entrepreneurs tap into greater clarity, confidence, and self-mastery, and unlocking not just their businesses, but also their personal lives as well. But Larry's kind of journey didn't start in the boardroom. It started much earlier. He actually helped his father, who was running a small concession store that served the mining community. And this was all round about when he was only 10 years old, or even before that. And he since, he waited on tables in restaurants. And he opened his first restaurant in 2005 in Nelspruit. And he really has developed a remarkable hospitality career. He's worked with well-known names like Mug and Bean, Milky Lane. He worked at the Lost City in Sun City. And you might know, if you're in Joburg, the Arbor Cafe. And also what was the well-known Voodoo Lily. Mm. And he's going to give us a little story later on about the Voodoo Lily and the change of name to the Gourmet Grocer and why that happened. But today he's sharing his powerful insights from his leadership journey. And you won't want to miss this whole story and how you look at things differently and how in a restaurant you develop over difficult times like the times when we had COVID-19 and the pandemic thereon. So, Larry, maybe when we start, and I'll go back into your history and you'll give us a little bit of a breakdown, but I was fascinated with the story of the Voodoo Lily, which was well known, all of a sudden just changing its name, and I thought it had changed ownership, but it didn't. Just talk us through what happened there and why.
Yeah, so, David, it was... you know, I suppose when I say a crazy story, it was COVID. You know, and COVID had come in, and you know, we didn't actually know what to do. And if you remember that first month, you know, everybody wasn't allowed out and that. But then the second month, and I can't remember for how long, it was 2, 3, 4 months, you know, when you were allowed out between 6 and 9. You know, and we thought, you know, what are we gonna do? You know, what are we actually going to do? How are we going to carry on? Because even though people were allowed out between 6 and 9, you couldn't actually go to restaurants. You couldn't go anywhere. You know, so we thought, okay, cool. Why don't we just move the coffee machine onto the pavement. And next thing, you know, for the next, you know, 2-3 months, we've got about 150, 200 people that are just congregating on that corner, you know, in the road. And then, you know, so that carried on, so which is great. And, you know, obviously it helped us, you know, sustain, you know, sustain the business. And then we were thinking, because it was Annie and I, my wife, we were thinking, what are we going to do? It's the Wednesday before Mother's Day. You know, can we do anything for Mother's Day? But obviously, you know, restaurants all closed and everything. Then we thought, why don't we just apply? Well, come and see first if we can apply for a supermarket license. Because if you recall, supermarkets were essential, you know, so they could trade throughout the day. You know, but and it was as simple as just going online and everything. And that Wednesday evening, we actually got our supermarket license, you know, accreditation. So that was it. And then the next day we think, okay, cool. Now that we got it, what do we do? Because now we need to obviously get stock, but we don't have cash. You know, then we're thinking, and then we thought, but what about all the suppliers that sell to restaurants? What about the artisanal, you know, artisanal bakers, sweet makers, sauce makers, you know, and all of that? Because I've always had this vision, and I've always loved the whole idea of a New York-style deli, you know, like a Jewish deli. And then, you know, so we got a hold of a lot of people, but obviously we didn't have cash. So we said to them, you know, this is our idea and everything like that, and will you do it on consignment? And of course, you know what, most of them did, because they didn't, you know, they needed us and we needed them. It was a, you know, a reciprocal thing, you know, so which was great. And then by that Sunday, we had a full, like, little supermarket already set up, everything. It was actually, you know, it was just amazing, you know. So, and then, you know, and then we were thinking, okay, cool, now what do we do, you know? And then Annie did a little bit of her PR magic, because, as you know, she's with you know, she's in PR. And next thing, you know, I was on radio stations. I think I was on Chai, you know, but I was in newspapers. I was on TV a couple of times. I was even invited by BBC Business, you know, to come onto their show, you know, which was, you know, which was all great. And obviously, we got a lot of media attention through that. And then, you know, so a lot of people coming, and then we thought, you know what, maybe this is the direction. And like I said, you know, I wanted to go the route of a New York style deli. And that's where, and that's actually how we morphed. You know, people always say pivoted. But, you know, we morphed, we evolved, you know, into the Gourmet Grocer.
And so you changed the name to match what you were
doing.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Correct, yeah.
Well, I find that a fascinating business story, because, you know, people, and you said that people pivot. But as an entrepreneur running a business, you often find either new opportunities and you have to change to take those opportunities, or you hit a brick wall and you either give up or you change and you morph according to what's needed. And your story, that story is incredible. Yeah. And I just want to mention one thing. You said that you then changed it and it was on consignment. Now, not everybody might know what consignment is, and what that means is people put their stuff on the floor of your business and you only pay for it once somebody's bought it.
Yeah, correct.
So if you're in a business and you don't have the cash flow, sometimes you can get the suppliers almost to fund the business by doing it on consignment. And that's part of the whole process of called bootstrapping, where you get the business to run itself.
And that was pure bootstrapping, you know, because, like, and Annie was so involved, you know, because obviously PR was also a little bit quiet during then. You know, and, you know, we were doing things all the time, and sometimes we didn't know what we were doing, but we just went ahead. You know, some things we royally failed, but you know what? A lot of the stuff worked. You know, so I really believe, you know, there was a great, it grew, you know, and we developed something good there.
Okay. Yeah. And near the Gourmet Grocer, that I believe has recently been sold, you've got your other restaurant called Arbor Cafe.
Yeah, so I actually sold the Gourmet Grocer in September 23 already. You know, so I'd already got out, and, you know, and but I've always had Arbor Cafe. And the reason why I actually also sold the Gourmet Grocer was, you know, because of my training, my coaching, and, you know, that was really taking a lot of time. And the Gourmet Grocer is like a, you know, it's a big machine, because you've got a bakery, you've got the winery, you've got the retail. You know, there's so many different moving parts, you know, to that business. And I just thought, you know what, it's just right now I'm not in that space. You know, I just need to focus on my training and coaching. And, yeah, and Arbor, you know what, I've got a great team there. You know, it's actually amazing, and I think the business has actually done better since I stepped out, you know.
And that's a good business lesson as well, because a lot of people who've been on this show have said, you, when you start a business, you need to run it in a way that one day it can run without you.
Yeah.
And that's how you can start scaling or growing or doing other things. So you do your coaching, but your restaurant runs on its own. I want to get into the aspect of how do you price something when you want to sell it? Because a lot of people are looking either to buy something or to sell something. And how do you go about that? But we're going to do that after the ad break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and I'm speaking to Larry Hodes, who's a business coach, leadership developer, and a restaurant owner. And we started off talking about the gourmet grocer and how it, as you said, you didn't use the word pivot. You said it morphed and it changed into something else. And just before we broke, I asked you, when you're looking to buy a business or sell a business, how do you price it so that if you're selling it, you get a buyer? And how do you do it if you're buying that you know that you're not overpaying for the business?
Yeah, so you know what? That really varies, you know, because if you go and look at, you know, let me use franchise. You know, a bit of a restaurant franchise model is that they will give you 36 times monthly turnover, profit. Okay? So, but an independent restaurant, you know, independent restaurant will go, you know, that can be 25, 30. You know, so that also, you know, so that's, you know, that's one of the factors. And I think a very big thing with, you know, when buying a business, first of all, is it the, you know, is there goodwill? You know, because, you know what, that's a really key thing. But is there goodwill?
What do you mean by goodwill?
Yeah. Is there goodwill in the business and not only the individual?
Right.
You know, because there's, there's some restaurants out there, you know, that are based all around, you know, the individual.
Right. And what is that goodwill when you say there's goodwill around the owner or around the business? What do you mean by goodwill?
You know, has it been going for a while? Okay. Is it, you know, does it deliver, you know, consistently? You know, definitely from a product and a service perspective. But I think, you know, what the key, you know, the biggest thing for me, you know, is just perhaps how, you know, I've always bought businesses is I've got to see the potential. Because you see, I'm a great guy. I can buy a business, and I'm the one exactly. And you know, and I think you referred to it, David. Is I'm great at setting things up, you know. But I'm not the one to continuously run it, you know. So you know, so for me, if I see an opportunity, and then I see, but there's potential. I definitely, that's my model that I follow, and I think the biggest thing is because you're buying a business, you're buying for the future. You know, so it has to be something that's got legs. It's got to be. And, you know, whether the profit's down, but you can see it later, or it's got profit right now, you know, and maybe you can just build on that some more. But it's definitely got to have some form of a future, some legs going forward.
So something like Arbor Cafe, did you start that yourself or did you buy it?
No, I actually bought it from a lady, Robin, in 2016. So.
And did you pay kind of like the 30 times or 25 times profit or?
It was a little bit less.
A little bit less.
That's my model and you know we've just been very fortunate. It's a great little business and it's just been growing wonderfully.
So your aim is you buy it at a certain multiple of the profits. Hopefully you grow it and one day if you sell it, then you sell it at even if it's the same multiple, but it's the same multiple of a much bigger business.
Yeah, absolutely.
More profits.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So when you talk about a business having legs, and you looked at Arbor Cafe and you said, I think it's going to work, I think it's got legs, meaning I think it's going to grow. What are those elements that you look at that say, okay, this has got potential or it hasn't got potential?
You know, so one of the key things, you know, that I've, and maybe, you know, I've worked this out, you know, as I get a little bit more wiser, is does the business resonate with you? You know, and for me, I've always been more of a premium brand, you know, that I've always had and followed and everything. You know, like, you know, I'm not going to mention any of the other, you know, companies. So there's certain franchises which are, you know, on the lower stand. No, I'm not going to say standards because they're great standards, but LSM. You know, for me, even if there's one that's going well right now, I wouldn't do it. Mm. You know, just because it doesn't resonate with me, so it doesn't stick in with my values.
So when you say a lower LSM, you're talking about it. It's people. It appeals to people with a lower spending.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
Ability. Oh, yeah. Sorry, okay.
Yeah. So that's you know. So that's what I do. But you know, I've actually made a decision. You know, and this was a crazy thing. Also, David was. I was also working with a coach, and you know, because I've got my own coach, and you know, and thinking, and there was, you know, and there was the time when I made a decision, you know, I'm going to get out of, you know, the gourmet grocer, and once I made a decision to actually get out of restaurants other than Arbor Cafe, and I love Arbor Cafe, you know, it's a great little business, and I love the people, you know, that go there, the staff and everything, and within the next 3 months, I think it was either 4 or 5 offers. You know, where people said, you know what, yes, some money. You go and open the restaurant. You go and do this. You know what, we'll give you the money and everything. But because I'd made that decision, you know, it became easier. It became easier to go and do that because it's in my nature just to go and try and do as much as possible. But I suppose through my business coaching and always telling somebody, you know, when I can see their heads all, you know, trying to focus on so many things. Mm. You know, that I've actually bought in, because I know it's right, that less is more. Mm.
So you're saying the lesson there is decide what you want to focus on, and then you can focus on that. Because part of focus on something is unfocusing on other things. And you decided to focus on something, and then, if I understood you correctly, you had a lot of challenges of people trying to unfocus you. Mm. And part of success is staying, and once you've made that decision, to stick with what you've decided to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, what do they call it? The shiny spark or something, you know, when something's shiny and then it's entrepreneurs. You know, it's the nature of actually being an entrepreneur. You know, that we want the next best thing or shiny thing and see how we can all do it. But one thing I've realized with business, and I've got no doubt about this, is that whatever you focus on is where your energy goes. You're so right. The more time that you've got to go and focus on something, the more energy you're going to put in, the more effort you're going to put in and everything. But whereas if you've got 3 or 4 things, you know, that take your time, and one thing, though, that I also believe is not all of those things are going to be equal, you know, that are going to give you the most. Because it's not only about the money. You know, it's because your energy goes where you also feel that you want to make the biggest effort. You want to do things. You want to create a difference, make a difference, and all of that. And if that's a little bit split, you're going to find automatically that sometimes you put the other two, even though you might have invested them and everything. But if your energy is not there, you're not going to go there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So your story about going for the shiny things made me think of something, and I think it's called Aesop's Fables. Where it's that story with a fox who's holding on to something and then sees a reflection of a crow with some cheese and tries to get the cheese in the reflection and then loses both.
Yes.
And maybe that was a story around focusing on what you've got rather than always chasing something else.
Oh, absolutely. In my business coaching, you know, sometimes when I deal with clients, they've got an idea, but they haven't fully, and they're actually doing quite well, you know, where they are in their market and their products and everything, and their geographical locations. But they haven't fully exploited it.
They haven't, you know, fully. So rather go and do that. Grow your brand, grow everything, and then start. Because moving somewhere else, moving to a new product when you're a business, actually takes a lot of effort, you know, a lot of resources, money, time, effort, and everything.
So just getting back to the question, when you were looking at a restaurant.
Yes.
Let's take a restaurant to start with, and we'll move into other businesses. What are the things that are for you, maybe if I can use the term, the green lights, and what are the red lights? What are the things that say, okay, this has got potential to grow, and what are the things that say this is going to stop it from growing?
So one of the things, because if you, so come and say for me in restaurants, from that point of view, and always just bring it back, is if you can see where a restaurant's current turnover is, and you can look around and you think, no, something's wrong here, that they should be doing much better. That's definitely, that's a green light for me. Another green light could be is when I walk into a place, and customers aren't happy, where reviews are low. So when things are negative, and then you think, okay, cool. You can come in, you can bring your team, bring in some people who know what they're doing and everything, and we can actually turn things around.
So that's interesting. So you're saying a green light is when things are not good, because it gives you opportunity to do even better, where people are looking sometimes to buy businesses that are shooting the lights out, but then there's not a lot you can add. So you're saying you need to buy into something that you can actually see that you can add value to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, because sometimes you're not just going to go, go into the business, and because you've actually got to look at the business and you can't only base it, that if, I call obviously if turnovers and there's a lot of complaints and everything, yes, you can use that, but you've actually got to be able to see, is there a future, but is there a growth future? Because the last thing you want to do is buy a low performing business. Yeah, you're buying it at a decent price, but then you're stuck with it. You've really got to go and do your due diligence. That's really big time.
So that's looking at the potential to grow.
Yeah, correct. Okay. Yeah.
So in your coaching business, if we move across to that, what are some of the lessons that you have coached people on in their businesses? If you can find a common theme, what are the common themes that come up that people might not be doing correctly, or where they can improve on?
So it's funny, I actually did a power productivity for entrepreneurs for Ought. When was it? Yesterday.
Okay.
I actually did a webinar. Because, in today's time, especially when, there's so much craziness and things are happening and people are having to react, your customers can get online with you, just so quickly and everything. It's not only managing your time, but managing your energy is key. That's really, really key. Another thing is working. So many times, even though, I've got some businesses that are 300-400 million rand.
Wow.
Okay. The individuals, the directors, working in the business. They're too involved in the business. And there's a big difference between being a CEO and who thinks strategy, because, especially, a business like that, takes a lot more thinking and how we're going to grow it and what we're going to do. I suppose the fundamentals are the same. But so often you find that, people are working too much in the business. And I think that's really a key thing.
And somebody like that, somebody who's running a 300-400 million rand business, why would they turn around and say, we need a Larry, or we need somebody external to help us? Surely they feel like, hey, I've built this business, I'm king.
I think a lot of us within time, become a little bit more mature, and we think, okay, cool, we've taken the business here, but now we need somebody else to come and help us. Because especially, for certain businesses, yes, like that, they've actually got a small, I'm just thinking of the one business, they've got a small leadership team. But sometimes at the top, it can be very lonely. And especially if there's only one guy you know, who's he might have a reasonably sized business. He doesn't want to get, you know, he doesn't always bring in the team, and he doesn't always have a great leadership team. So he brings in somebody, an external, who perhaps is going to bring fresh eyes, or, you know, says, you know what, I'm actually struggling. You know, Larry, please, can you, you know what, I need to elevate myself. I can't, you know, I'm so involved in the, you know, in the business. I'm working 7 to 10 every day. It's absolutely crazy. And that's the thing also with entrepreneurs. You know, we believe that, you know what, we're going to get freedom. You know, so we'll go open up a business. But, you know, that's a lie, you know, or a myth or whatever you want to call it, because we're so passionate about it. And I can understand, you know, sometimes, you know, that people are scared to let go, you know, because they also think, and sometimes I go through that myself, you know, we're scared, you know, that is somebody else going to do it as well as us? But when growing a business, the biggest thing is to grow. Because when you don't know something, and this is one thing that I've learned and I'm getting better at it, is if I don't know something, instead of me trying to do it, I'd rather go and spend some time and, you know, spend some money and go and give it to somebody who's a professional. I don't have to, you know, it's like the focus, going back to focus. So I can focus on the things that I should be focusing on. But leaders, you know, of certain businesses, you know, I'm just going to talk now whether it's a 10 million rand business or a 500 million rand business. Sometimes, you know, they're too scared to let go, and they're so involved. And I'm not talking micromanaging, you know, but they're so involved in every part of the business, you know, that you can't actually focus on the growth of the business, the sustainability. Because, you know, like I said, where, you know, if you focus on so many things, but their key role is there to go and grow the business.
And in order to grow a business, what are the things you need to do to grow a business if you're at that level? It's clearly you're not going to go and do the sales yourself. As a CEO of a business, what are the things that you should be focusing on? Is it purely strategy? Is it just sitting in your office and looking out the window and thinking what we should do? Or is it more than that?
No, well, I think, you know what, I think, you know, I think what's always a good, is a good place to start, David, is to take a step back, you know, and go and put in a strategy. But I'm not talking about a strategy, you know, where our goals are going to be this, you know, before that. Because, you know, because often, and this is, and, you know, maybe here's a good lesson, yeah, I'm just thinking, is so many people believe that, you know, that they've done strategy if they've thought, okay, cool, we need to go and grow a business by 10%. Okay, cool. How are we going to get there? You know, that's all. But that's not organizational strategy. That's not company strategy. You know, so you got to go and sit. You've got to go and do a proper analysis. You know, what are our unique value propositions? You know, what are our strengths and weaknesses? Who's our core customer? You know, how are we going to go, you know, which geography locations are we in? You know, our products, does it serve our clients, our culture? You know, then once you've really got that, and I've just seen, you know, and I've worked, and this is, you know, I've actually worked with quite a lot of entrepreneurs who have never done that. You know, we go and sit, we go and take out a full 2 days, you know, and they say, oh, you know what, I wish I'd done this earlier. Because what it does, when you do a full strategy like that, a company organizational strategy, you get so much clarity. And with that clarity, you also get confidence.
Right. So it's almost like some businesses will, it's like an analogy if I make, it's the same as getting in a car and just driving, and you're going to say, well, I'll see where it takes me, take the best route as I see the best route. And you might land up somewhere great, but you don't know where you're aiming for. And what you're saying by taking these 2 days or whatever, you're actually creating a roadmap, and you know where you're aiming to get to. And you, surprisingly enough, you're saying some businesses have never done that.
No, there's a couple of businesses, you know, just that are in the hundreds of millions. They've never ever done a strategy before.
That's incredible.
No, it is. But I'm not only, you know, but it is. So you go and do it with them, or you go and do it with a 10 million rand business or a 5 million rand business. It really just gives you so much clarity. Because come and say, you know, I just want to go back to my original example, you know, when... come and say a business wants to grow 10%. So all they do is go and say, you know, which is the standard these, you know, these days. Anything 7, 8, 9, 10% commits grow. But You know, but that only, you know, so what they end up doing is they don't end up thinking, are there other opportunities? Where there is, whereas if you're in a proper strategic mindset, a framework, you know, working with things, then you begin identifying possible other opportunities, you know, of what can be done. Mm. And then you might increase that from 10%, you know, to, you know, a bigger percentage or whatever it is.
And the strategy is finding opportunities that are greater than what's just in front of you now.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to unpack a little bit more around the strategy and how we do that, but again, after the break.
Okay, cool.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. This is the AutJet Business Show, and you might be thinking, who are we been listening to, because I haven't mentioned his name for a while, and it's Larry Hodes. He's a business coach, leadership developer, and a restaurant owner. So Larry, just before we went to the break, I asked you around the strategy, and I want to ask you two things. I want to ask you one around when we talk about strategy, and you mentioned a little bit around it about SWOT analysis, your strength, your weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. If you can unpack that a little bit, and then I want to go back a bit into your history of how did you get into the restaurant game, and through that, how did you get into leadership? But let's start with the strategy first.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, David, you'd like for me to talk about strategy and the model and that. So my business coaching, you know, so here's another story just very quickly where I realized, because I'd started business coaching 2009, 2010, I can't recall. You know, and I was with, and I've been with Nedbank since 2014. But a lot of that was where it was a lot of self, you know, self-teaching, my own experiences, my own learnings and everything. And then it was about in 2022, you know, and I thought, and, you know, it was actually weird. It was about 7 or 8 of my colleagues and some friends, you know, and at different times they mentioned, you know, that they've been coached by Grow, you know, and I thought, okay, wow, and everything. And for me, and then, you know, and for me, there was one, and I'll just say, it was one of the best moves that I've ever made. Even though, come and say, you know, I've got to give them a percentage, you know, because I work with them, you know, but they provided me with systems and models and everything like that, you know, which I felt was lacking. You know, for myself. And, you know, so when I talk about strategy, we talk about the strategy cascade, and we use, so I use Grow's strategy cascade. And it begins with, who is your target audience? Who is your client? And we really, really drill down to who the position is within the company, what type of industry, what are their pains, what are their, their wants, you know, and all of that. Then we go into culture. And, you know, I do believe that there's not enough attention being paid to culture, you know. And, but before, part of culture is, what is your purpose of being? So come and say it's a restaurant. You know, you can't go and just say, well, we're here to sell food. Mm. It's got to be a bigger purpose. It's got to be a bigger why, you know. And for us, it is every guest leaves happy. You know, and that's what we focus on. You know, and how we do that is through the food, and, you know, and the drinks and everything, and the, you know, and the experience to get there. You know, then we talk about the culture, the values, and then we unpack that some more, and then we do BHAG. You know, from Jim Collins, Big Hairy Audacious Goal, because goals have been proven that if you set a goal, you know, in say 7 to 10 years time. But it's a big, hairy, audacious goal. But people have bought into it. You know, you will be, you know, and this is where I've seen businesses that will stop doing the average 10%, 8 or 10%, because they say, you know what, for us to achieve that, you know, for us to move there, we've actually got to think bigger. Because remember, you know, this is another thing with mindset. If you're going to set your business as 8, 9%, it means that you've been average, like with everybody else. And it just means you've got to continue basically with the average things, you know, going forward. So what you're doing and just going forward. But whereas if you go and say, you know, come, it's moved to 25%. Immediately people say, oh, no, you know what, it's not possible. Because a lot of us, we make our goals. Where do we set our goals? From our current thinking. And if our current thinking says, no, it's not possible and everything, okay? But if we move to 25%, it means that your current thinking will not get you there. You've really got to change your thinking. So that's, and you know, and all of us are equipped like with a, you know, we call, you know, it's a reticular activating system, you know, that is there to assist us. We've got, you know, we actually such incredible beings that we can actually get it working. And I think a lot of us, when we go from a business point of view, we go and set a business as 8, 9, 10%, we're just becoming average. You know, and whereas we've got the ability to go and actually stretch ourselves. Please, is it guaranteed that we're going to get 25%? No, absolutely not. But there's a good chance you're going to get 12, 13, 14% and start building, that memory, that muscle, you know, to go and actually do that. You know, so that's the BHAG. And then we also create a vivid vision around that. Then there's your SWOT, which is your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Then we look at it's called a sandbox. Like, where do you play? Who's your product? What's your product? Your geography, your customers. Are you actually serving the products that you're serving? Are they actually serving your customers? Are they the right products? And then we start thinking, are there alternative moves to make? Side moves, you know, to go and make. And, you know, then we'll start looking at normally strategy, we do it for that year. But then you do 2 year, 3 year, and 5 year. But not many people are, you know, 3 and 5 is, you know, is not these days. And then once we've done that, a key thing is we look at our unique value proposition. And this is one of the biggest things, you know, that I think some businesses miss, is what separates you from the rest. Because if you're just going to be like everybody else, you know, then you basically, you're trading as being that's commodity priced. Because they're the market is going to determine, you know, your price when you refer to price early on. Whereas if you've got something unique, you know, that is difficult for somebody else to go and copy, then what happens? You can automatically, you know, charge more of a premium price. And that's a great thing. And then we go and say, and this is where, you know, some of the magic also happens. Once you've created your UVPs and you understand, you know, your product and geography and everything, we go I've just had a blank. Anyway, we go and ask, what are those specific traits? What are those specific competencies that are required for you to go and ensure that you meet your UVP, your unique value proposition, as well as your strategy? And then we say, if you become great in those, you know you're going to move the business up.
So what you're talking about is, first of all, you called it the BHAG.
BHAG, yeah.
What did you say?
Big, hairy, audacious goal.
Big, hairy, audacious goal.
Yeah.
And what that is almost forcing you to go out of your comfort zone. Because now, to get out of your comfort zone, you have to do something different. And that's what you're talking about. And then you're saying, focus on what's unique, because that's what people are buying, what you're different. And by going through this, it sounds like, and as you explained it, you've got a whole system and the one builds into the other. And so you're building, it's like creating a puzzle, and each piece is a different piece in the puzzle, and you've got to fill all the pieces to get that full picture.
And then what happens, David? You've got that clarity. Right. You know, then you've looked at absolutely everything. You know, and that's where a lot of the magic happens. You know, I just want to go back on this, you know, on this goal thing. And you mentioned, you know, as human beings, one of our, you know, there's two things that we want. We want path of least resistance. We want the easiest route, and we want to remain comfortable. And that's exactly why a majority of people will go and form a goal from what they know. Okay, from what they know, which is 8-10%, because it means that they don't have to challenge themselves. They don't have to put themselves really out there, where, you know, because they'd rather remain comfortable. Whereas if you push yourself, yes, you've got to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. But if you get through that and start working and everything, it's amazing what you and your team can do for your business.
So it's almost like you have to go against your own gut feel. We want to have, you called it the path of least resistance, and to be comfortable and to grow, you have to be uncomfortable. Mm.
And you need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
And that's the next stage of it. So,
and that's where the magic starts happening.
That's great. And the magic happens, yeah, because we go for adverts. So
okay.
We're going to take another break and then we'll wrap it up.
Don't worry, they're increasing their prices by 30%.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life. We've come a long way together. Hundreds of thousands listening in over 80 countries, sharing the same goals as you, the same vision, the same values. Thank you for staying with us. Here's to you. Hi FM 101.9 megahertz of life. The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and together we're listening to Larry Hodes talking about building strategy, and the only way you're growing is to be uncomfortable. And on one of the very early episodes, I spoke about the lobster scenario of a lobster grows and grows and then has to get rid of its shell. And the only reason it knows it has to get rid of its shell is that it's uncomfortable and it's painful. And only when it gets rid of its shell can it grow further. And that's kind of you echoing that kind of story.
Yeah, that's actually a great analogy. Yeah.
And I want to go back a little bit to your life of... And it's something I normally start off and we go chronologically, but we're going to go the other way around now. So you mentioned that at the age of 10, your dad had a business selling to the mines. And I think it was 10 or maybe younger. You started actually working in the business. So just take us through kind of the milestones of what did you do and how did you learn what you've learned to get to the stage where you're at now?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think a key thing where it, you know, where it started was with my dad. You know, he had a concession store in Carltonville. And, you know, and obviously being 10, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still a little naughty, you know, little boy and carrying on. But, you know, I just used to go into the business and just start, you know, packing and, you know, and going doing and all those things and just watching him. You know, and one thing, you know, that I learned from my dad was it's about relationships. You know, and I think that's actually such a key thing, you know, in business today. And then I moved from there and I've always felt that, you know, that I was gonna be an entrepreneur. I didn't know what though. I didn't know that it was gonna be restaurants, you know, that was gonna be a big part of my career. But I always wanted to do things. And, you know, next thing I was selling newspapers at 13 or 14. Then I was, I still worked at OK as a cashier. You know, there was,
at the young age.
Yeah, at about 13. You know, there was still when slave labor was allowed, but, you know obviously a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I worked at Spur. You know, so I really, during my teenage years, you know, was spent working a lot. You know, there was school and everything, obviously. But, you know, there was that. And I've always had this, you know, thing of, you know, of wanting to go into business.
And at that young age, did you do it because you were forced to do it? Did you do it because you loved it? Did you do it because you needed the pocket money? What was your, or did you do it because you thought, one day I want to be an entrepreneur and I know I'm learning? What was your driving force?
Oh, no, I think in the beginning it was pocket money. You know, to go and do things and everything, and I think it goes back to the point where I knew I wanted to do something, own my own business, but I don't know if it was anything more than just pocket money at that stage. But I think, you know, obviously a key thing would have been how can I learn, how can I learn what to do, what not to do, and things like that.
So what are the stuff after that, jobs and opportunities that you did that taught you what you know today?
Oh, so I think is key is, you know, is relationships.
You know, there's absolutely, you know, that's, you know, that for me is no doubt. What also came up was having systems and processes. A business has to be systemized, you know, because otherwise, and that's, you know, that's also one of the key reasons why people work so in the business, because there's no systems. Another thing that I've learned is the leader or the individual has to have self-drive. And that is possibly, you know, from a business point of view, because I've also worked with guys where they've got incredible ideas, okay, but they don't have that discipline, that, you know, that motivation to follow through.
Can everybody run a business, or are some people not business leaders or runners?
So I think it goes back to the question of being a leader. You know, because, you know, because come and say somebody doesn't have the business sense, you know, they can call somebody like me or, you know, or another business coach, you know, to go and help them. And that's, you know, and that's exactly. So I think, you know, the main thing is that you've got to have a great idea. You know, so whether you're a good entrepreneur or not, you've always got to have an idea. Because if you're going to go to market and you're going to have a bad idea, especially coupled with bad motivation or discipline, you're not going to go anywhere. But there's also guys that have maybe got an average idea, but because they're so disciplined, you know, and they push themselves and, you know, really go out there, they can actually make it happen.
Fantastic. So what I've heard in this last few minutes is you've spoken about relationships are important, systems and processes, and you definitely need that self-drive. And that self-drive is you pushing yourself to do better. So I just want to thank you for this, the insights that you've given us to this business or to the business world, and for sharing your story. I'm David Zeidel. This has been Larry Hodes, and this has been the Orchard Business Show.
Wonderful, David. I really appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Thank you.